Hello, everyone, and welcome to Grip Lock, Foundation Disc Golf's weekly podcast. I'm Hunter, joined by Trevor this week. Connor might join us later in the show. He's at an appointment. I don't know what time he's coming back. But super exciting episode today. We delayed the release of this a day because I was at the Music City Open, and we wanted to not just like throw in me recording something from my phone and mix it in. We figured it was better just wait a day and then I'd be back and we can just do it normal.
Yep.
So that's what this is. So I have a lot of stuff from Music City. We'll talk about the new tee pads, the standard tee pads. A lot of people were asking about that. I got some notes from being on the ground. We'll update the manufacturer, cup standing, a little Trevor's trivia, the first step towards disc golf gambling. We got to talk about that. And then we will tackle our top 10 is the goal here. Which the Music City did not help anything with the top 10. But
well, they'll be shifting around. Well, there was a bunch of old guys that decided to do stuff.
Exactly.
But the good news is they've all stunk for long enough that I feel like it won't
matter. Well, it's going to be interesting. So
at least none of them won.
That is true. That would have been very interesting. But let's hop into today's episode by announcing our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Manscaped. Did you know one man every hour, every day is diagnosed with testicular cancer? In fact, testicular cancer is the most common form of cancer amongst men aged 15 to 35. And with April being the National Testicular Cancer Awareness Month, our friends at Manscaped have partnered with the Testicular Cancer Society to help spread awareness for men's health and early cancer detection. Visit manscaped.com/TCS to learn how to check yourself for early signs of cancer. And as always, you can use promo code GRIPLOCK for 20% off plus free shipping at manscaped.com. You can perform simple routine checkups at home while enjoying your Manscaped products you use every day, like the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. The Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra features two interchangeable skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top, and a new foil blade for going smooth and sleek. With dual LED spotlights, you'll achieve better visibility, making every trim more precise and hassle-free. Don't like making a mess? This thing is waterproof, so you can shave in the shower, the bath, or in the ocean if you want. And you can bring this trimmer wherever you go to, thanks to its wireless charging capabilities and travel lock feature. In addition to providing the right tools and solution for comfortable and easy grooming, Manscaped is committed to raising awareness and giving support for fighters, survivors, and families impacted by testicular cancer. That's why they will be donating $50,000 to the Testicular Cancer Society. Help save lives and balls by going over to manscaped.com/TCS and sharing their funny and educational Check Yourself video. And while you're at it, grab 20% off plus free shipping with our code GRIPLOCK to support the show while you're at it. So thanks again to Manscaped for being one of our, actually probably the longest supporter of GRIPLOCK.
Has to be.
Yeah. So the Music City Open went down this past weekend. On the MPO side, we had Simon Lazat taking it down, Paul Macbeth coming in second place there. And then we had Ricky Wysocki and Chris Dickerson tying for third. On FPO, we had Kristen in first, Holland Handley in second, and Henna Blomroos rounding out the top three.
You don't have to
three.
Mention anybody else after the first two.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just we always do for 1, 2, 3, but it was 1, 2, 3.
There you go. Yeah. That's better.
So Kristen is at 13 under. Holland Handley was at 9 under. Henna Blomroos was at even. I mean, to be fair, it was tied up after two rounds. Like, Kristen ended up winning by 4, but I mean, it was just a Kristen and Holland show.
Yeah.
And once Kristen, so she was down. Is this year or last year?
Oh,
this is year. Yeah, okay. She was down.
You know
4.
What's interesting though is the link to the. I was looking for a bunch of different tournaments yesterday, and if you click on Open in Austin on the Pro Tour website, it takes you to last year. So
yeah, no, it can get confusing.
You got to stay on the lookout for.
Well,
that.
Well, also if you search PDGA Music City Open, which is like how I was trying to get here, it always brings up 2023. So that's why I was just like, did I just bring up the wrong one? But no. So Kristen was down 4 after round 1, tied it up after round 2. In my opinion, I kind of already felt like it was over after round 2. I was only tied. I understand that. But when Kristen's already done the chase down, then like there's nothing left. So
you got to really step on her throat. If you get a lead on Kristen, you've got to extend the lead.
Yeah, you need to have it by like 6 going to the final round.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she didn't. So end up winning by 4, 13 under, 9 under. And like we said, then Henna was at even. And there was even a gap after Henna.
I would say, great battle up top there. Man, I wish any of the rest of the field mattered out there.
To be fair, Owen Scoggins wasn't there. Missy Gannon, not there.
We felt it.
Yeah,
felt
you could definitely tell. You could definitely tell. But yeah, it was a two-horse race. And as long as Kristen plays solid at Champions Cup, she should be the first 1,000-rated FPO player.
Yeah, I was going to say, it feels like she's on the stretch. The fact that she was able to hold 999 last update, I feel like she's on the run right now that's going to get her to 1,000 rated.
Yeah, because she went 1,003, 1,035, 1,012, but it's all about Champions Cup should go in before the update happens. So,
which I feel like that should work somewhat in her favor just because that course is so difficult that the bottom of the field is just going to get pooped on.
Yeah, you would think.
But also not a ton of OB.
Because, it'll finish up on April 28th, so it'll go in on this next one. But I like Kristen at Northwood. I think she's going to play that course just fine. I mean, what did... how'd she do at Ledgestone last year? Did she play Ledgestone last year?
I think
that was during the stretch
she
was gone.
Yeah, I think she was gone.
So when has she played Northwood
before? Because that was one of the elite pluses that she missed.
Let's go to 2022, see if she played Ledgestone. I don't know if she's ever played Ledgestone.
Dude, that's an interesting
story. No,
here it is.
Yeah, she came in third in 2022. And when they played, because
Missy kind of kicked butt at that tournament.
There is a Northwood redesign here. And so they played round one in the finals at Northwood. So it's not the exact same course, but Kristen went 5 under, 1 under through her 2 rounds. Missy at that point went 4 under, 4 under.
Okay.
So
she's competitive there.
Yeah. Round rating wise back then, Kristen went 1,003, 975 out there. Mm. But again, it's a different course. That was 2 years ago. So, you do like Kristen at Northwood. You like Kristen at every course.
Yeah, I say.
Kristen Tatar is kind of like Scottie Scheffler. I saw a bunch of tweets after he just won his fourth event in five starts.
And no, she's like Nelly Korda.
That's better.
She's won 5 of 5 right now.
It's closer to Scottie because Kristen hasn't won 5 of 5.
It's true. No, it's true. But I'm just saying like that feeling of inevitability right now. We're seeing it just across all the golf right now.
Yeah, because I was seeing people were talking about Scottie at whatever next event he's playing because obviously there's a kid on the way and they don't know exactly, but people were like talking about the course and blah, 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 and then they would always be like, has anyone seen Valhalla? I think it was Valhalla for the PGA. They're like, has anyone seen Valhalla? I mean, if it has 18 holes and 18 greens, you gotta like Scottie out there. Like, that's how I feel about Kristen.
Yeah.
Like, has anyone seen Northwood? If it has 18 baskets and tee pads, you gotta like Kristen out there.
Yeah.
Are
they playing disc golf? Then I think I like
Kristen.
Throwing
frisbees? Yeah, you gotta go with Kristen.
Sounds good. Like Kristen there. Yeah.
It's the Kristen Tatar show. That just is what it was.
Gosh.
Now, we do have to talk. We'll talk here because there's a much bigger FPO storyline. During round two, day two, there was a delay due to a threat that the Pro Tour has never officially said what this threat was or who it was towards, but Natalie Ryan has come out and said it, Neptune has said it, and it was on Twitter that allegedly this threat was towards Natalie Ryan. The Pro Tour initially made a statement that there was a threat against the event.
Mm-hmm.
So I called Jason, who was working the foundation booth, because I was at breakfast when this happened.
Yeah.
I called Jason working the foundation booth. I'm like, what the heck's going on? Are you safe? Like, are you off the course? What's going on? And he was like, all the fans have been brought off the course. Everyone's cleared the course. There's a much higher increased police presence right now. But we are kind of being told we're safe right here. Like, we're fine here. It's basically, without going into more details, that's basically how it seemed. And so because at that point, the statement was it was on the entire event. The Pro Tour then has updated it and released this statement. It says, earlier this morning, the Pro Tour temporarily suspended competition. The suspension lasted about an hour, by the way. But the temporarily suspended competition and spectating at the 2024 Music City Open due to a threat of potential violence against a competitor at this weekend's tournament. So the Pro Tour updated it to just be a competitor. The tweet I had saw, Natalie Ryan had posted, I believe, and it looked like it was on the Discord somewhere. There's no way to verify this tweet, where this came from. So, because Natalie was claiming it was a threat of a mass shooting.
Allegedly.
The Pro Tour, that was the claim. The Pro Tour is claiming that this was, the type of threat was unspecified and made no specific mention of harm to any other person, but rose to the level of threat at which the tour staff began initiating safety protocols.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
So what this exact threat is, who knows?
It must have been pretty intense. The problem with, like, the social media and all that stuff is, like, you're going to get so many threats of some sort, and the problem is like you have to take them seriously.
You have to take them serious, yeah. Because the one time you don't is the time it will be.
Exactly. But I have to imagine that the nature of this one was probably pretty serious because, you know, obviously it was enough for them. I mean, there's been a lot of hate thrown in that direction, but this was enough for them to shut down the whole event. I was a little freaked out because I just saw it. Somebody posted it in like our group chat and I was like, oh my gosh, like I hope everybody there's okay. Because I just had no idea like anything about it at the time. Luckily, it seems like, you know, nothing ended up happening, which is obviously what we wanted, and that they were able to handle it pretty quickly. That it didn't delay the tournament too much, which is great. But yeah, definitely pretty spooky. Like,
yeah.
Never want to see that.
The Pro Tour said, based on preliminary guidance from the Metro Police and in the interest of safety for player, staff, volunteers, spectators, and vendors, the Pro Tour suspended the competition and removed all individuals from the area while it was assessed. After assessing the situation with the Metro Police and local tournament staff, additional security measures were deployed on site and play resumed at 11 a.m. And then Jeff Spring said, threats of violence at DGPT events are utterly unacceptable and are treated with the utmost seriousness by our entire staff. We have deployed additional security resources to enhance the safety measures in place for all individuals on site. Those measures will be in place for the remainder of the weekend. I want to thank local law enforcement and local tournament staff for their prompt and professional response. Furthermore, I want to assure players, spectators, and fans that we are continuing to practice vigilance. We are in continued communication with both Metro and Nashville Police Departments, who continue to investigate the situation, and we will continue to coordinate and cooperate with both entities in full. So play resumed about an hour and a half-ish after it was stopped, and we had a video. I believe Robbie C was out there, and he went and walked with the chase card, which is the card Natalie Ryan was on, and there was like police presence on the card. Mm-hmm. So that farther backs that this was directly against Natalie Ryan, but as the Pro Tour, the only official statement never really pointed at like which competitor this was.
Yeah.
So all signs from outside point that it must have been some type of serious threat made against Natalie Ryan. But the Pro Tour just responded quickly, pulled everyone off, and then resumed. And it was a safe event the rest of the time.
I think the good news is, and the credit to the Pro Tour is, everything seemed to happen quickly enough that you can tell they obviously were prepared for something like this, which any large-scale event staff should be prepared for something like that. But it seems like they had their protocols in place, and they had everything. It seemed like everything went pretty smoothly as much as it could, so I'd give them credit for that.
Yeah, and the other, because like you never want to see something like this happen, but because nothing actually happened, like the threat was made, right, but like no action happened, it's a great learning moment of the Pro Tour to see like the, like one of the changes that they implemented being someone on the ground was, I went Friday, and I'll get to some of my on the ground notes because some of this is in there, but Friday I went, got my spectator pass, checked in, went through the gate, walked in, that was that. Sunday, because Saturday I came and just was in the vending booth. I didn't go to the course, which the vending booth area was in the public, so you could just, anyone could get there. I didn't go to the course. Sunday I went to the course. Sunday, because we got emails after the fact that like for the rest of the rounds, no disc golf bags were allowed on the courses. No bags, like no large bags, no carts are going to be allowed on the course. Makes sense. Yeah. Probably shouldn't be anyways. But one of the big notable changes that I feel like this should be in, just this is now policy going forward, because it's everywhere else you go, this is what happens, is like you went and checked in, showed them your badge, and then you walked over if you had a bag of any type. Like my wife had a purse, that was a diaper bag. You walked over and got your bag checked.
Yeah.
And you just bag check as you walked in.
Yeah.
Like, that's a type of a learning experience of, like, that hasn't been a thing at disc golf events prior to this.
Yeah.
It should be a thing at every disc golf event going forward.
Certainly.
Because it's, like, one of those, like, wake-up moments where, okay, how you reacted, now we have some things of, like, now we put that in place. Because I have never thought of it before. I'm sure no one really has. Because, like, you just walked, you're going to a disc golf course.
Right.
You know, like, that's the last thing on your mind.
It doesn't feel like you're walking into a venue as much.
Exactly. Yeah. But then once something like this happens, and then they implemented this bag check, and it happened, like, I was walking in and we got our bag checked, I was like, why has this never happened before? Like, yeah. Why were we able to just walk on before?
When we went to the PGA Tour event, it was before we even got on the bus to get shuttled there.
Yeah.
Like, they were checking you then. So yeah, I mean, you definitely have to take it seriously. And yeah, I'll be curious to see if they stick with certain things moving forward. I think you're right. Like, as much as that was a very unfortunate and scary thing, I can't imagine, especially being on the other end of that threat, that's terrifying. It is good that nothing happened and that they're able to basically get a practice run of like, what does that look like? Because it won't be the last time something like this happens. That's just what goes on.
Well, and it also allows them to learn.
Hopefully it will be, but.
Yeah, it also allows them to learn like what we can implement at all future Pro Tours. That's right. What I'm hoping, if I go into a Pro Tour 6 months from now, that bag check's still happening. Because
or also, at least clear bag policy or at least something like
that's
that.
That's the other thing. Like, because again, before, it's always been a question of like, why do people bring their full disc golf bag?
Yeah.
And like, I understand like you're going to buy a bunch of discs and whatever, but like, if you're bringing your bag full of discs, you don't need it out there. Right. Like, that could be a, that maybe should be a policy.
Just make vendors provide clear bags to,
yeah, like, to, maybe
carry your Dissin that you bought. Like,
it's maybe all vendors have to provide a bag. Like, I don't know. But is those these are type of events that, like, can get policies into place that now ensure nothing can happen going forward. Because, like, this could have been much worse. Like, yeah, you know, it very easily, it, had the Pro Tour not acted fast enough, had a threat not been made, action just been taken, like, it very easily could have went way, way worse than it did, and it didn't. So now we can take that as a blessing of, like, because nothing way more serious happened, we can learn where were the holes that it could have and close them up, to ensure player safety, ensure fan safety going forward. So that was one thing I noticed, though, from, like, Friday getting my thing till Sunday, and it was one of those moments, like, where I was just, once they checked my bag, I'm like, why aren't we doing this every time?
Yeah, like, that's, no, that's true. Something sometimes that, with safety measure, it's like the way airline security evolved, like post 9/11, pre 9/11. I think nowadays, if we look back at certain things that went on, we were like, how was that ever okay? Like,
yeah.
that's kind of how safety precautions can become. Is like they implement it, and you're like, all of a sudden you feel like, man, I was really unsafe before.
Yeah, yeah, you don't realize it before. Yeah. So hopefully that's something that the Pro Tour, and I'm sure it is, they seem to be very, they took this event very seriously. I think they take all of it seriously. We're like, now that something like this has happened, it right. kind of wakes you up of like, how are we ever letting all these people bring whatever they
just
wanted?
Giant on the, Zuka cards.
Yeah, just rolling them out onto the course. Seriously. Like, how is that ever happening? So hopefully that's a new thing. But on the MPO side, Simon Lazat did exactly what Trevor said he does during the preview show, which was he just capitalized when it was his weekend. I mean,
you just knew it was going to happen.
I didn't get to watch. I had my toddler with me. I didn't get to physically watch a ton of disc golf this weekend, but I watched some, and then I watched Jomez to, like, make sure for this podcast I had watched the tournament. And so in person, you couldn't really see. Like, I've watched some of the shots in person. You couldn't see how lucky some of Simon's breaks really were until you saw the camera angle on some of them. But luck is going to happen either way, right? Like, I saw someone, because Ricky posted hole 18. He threw a shot that was coming back in bounds, hit a spotter, stayed out of bounds. Mm-hmm. And someone responded to that tweet, because Ricky was, like, tweeting about not complaining or, you know, he was, I think Ricky was more like, why is a spotter in a spot that they could get hit? And, like, why? Yeah. Like, he wasn't, like, upset per se. He was just, like, frustrated, with the, which who wouldn't be? But someone did make a good point in the responses of, like, well, didn't at GMC the opposite thing happen and your disc hit an umbrella and stayed right. in bounds? Like, the course giveth, the course taketh away. Like, mm-hmm. it just kind of... which that happened in disc golf, right? Some people have unlucky breaks. Some people have lucky breaks. I mean, in the final round, you would see Simon get a lucky break and Paul get an unlucky break, like, back to back in, like, the exact same area.
Just golf.
That's just golf. Yeah. But you have to give props to Simon, because, like, I forget what hole it was, but he threw a shot that, like, could have very easily got stuck in a tree,
mm-hmm.
came through the tree and just popped on the other side. And then he hit the, like, 40-foot putt.
Yeah.
Well, where, like, when he was given the chance, like, when he got the lucky break, he capitalized, which mm-hmm. is exactly what you were saying. And he did that over and over and over to, next thing you know, he won by 5.
The thing about Simon is, yeah, I've been thinking about it a lot, because, like, I said that on the previous show and then I watched it happen again, where, like, he is just... And if you look back at his finishes last year, he was, you know, he was around the top 10 a decent bit, but he's just not always the player to just be. He's not a Calvin Heimberg, right? He's not just going to be living in the top 5 and just winning when things line up. He just every once in a while gets in contention, and when he does, he wins. Like, he just makes sure, especially like this, when he has a lead, he just ran away with it.
Yeah.
He got a sight at the basket, he was making his putt. I think that ultimately, I think he's an underrated, like, circle two, like, if he can see the basket, he's making it when he's hot type putter. I think people put a lot of guys in that category, but Simon is absolutely, like, people talk about his arm. He wins those tournaments with his putt.
Yeah.
Because if you watch that tournament, he wasn't just parking every single basket, and he did throw some insane shots, some great recovery shots as well. But he's just spinning that disc in from everywhere. And this dude has won 7 times in, like, 2 calendar years. He is winning so many tournaments, and you can only do that. I mean, he doesn't even tour the whole year. He's kind of, like, taking a load off a little bit because he's a dad now. Like, he doesn't have as much time to put to the game. But when he is having his weekend, he knows when he has it, and he just takes it. He absolutely is just going to grab that win. If you see that guy going into the final day with a lead, it feels like almost a certainty right now.
Yeah, which the stat you just brought up, StatMando tweeted this, said most MPO major slash elite wins since May of 2022. You have Simon Lazat at 7, Ricky Wysocki at 6, Gannon Burr at 5, and then Anthony Barella, Calvin Heimberg, Isaac Robinson all tied at 3. Now, ABs are all this year, yeah. 2024. But still, since May of 2022, so basically 2 calendar years, Simon is the winningest player over that time frame.
And that's what I'm saying. He will not get thrown in the category most of the time. I mean, he was in the player of the year running a couple years ago. Because I think looking back, I think he did win 4 that year.
He popped off.
But it's because of the inconsistencies in between, especially that year, because that year I think he won back-to-back. And then he does a lot of his winning at the end of the season. That's the thing, too, about him getting a win this early. Now, he won this event last year as well, but a lot of times he comes on strong, especially you get to Maple Hill. You know, he's always dangerous there. I think he'd be very dangerous at Worlds this year.
I agree.
But, yeah, he just wins and wins and wins. And, like, the way I look at disc golf, like, you can say what you want about being consistent, but if you're winning the more times than anyone else, like, that there needs to be a certain level of respect there. And it's just not something you see. It's not something you've ever really seen in disc golf. I feel like for the history of our sport, the guys that get the most wins are the guys that live on the top of the leaderboard.
Yeah.
It's very interesting seeing a guy who doesn't always live up there, but then just like will pop up there and win and pop up there and win. It's not super common. Actually, what's funny is another guy on that list who I would say is the most similar is Isaac Robinson.
Yeah.
I think Isaac Robinson is another guy who has not shown us that he can be a super consistent, but I think he played awful this past weekend, if I remember.
Yeah, I don't even know.
He's shown us that he is not really the most consistent golfer at this point.
Yeah, he's 71st.
He's a lot younger than Simon. Simon's now 31. But when Isaac gets hot and he has like a little stretch, he grabs wins. And that, like last year, he found that stretch and was able to grab a couple majors. So I think that there are more players like that now than there used to be. And it creates a very interesting dynamic because now all of a sudden you can't just be expecting the wins to come from one segment of the leaderboard. You know, there could be guys that pop in like Simon. And yeah, I mean, at age 31 to be doing what he's doing right now, it's a really good look for the longevity of players. You know, we're getting into this era in disc golf, I think, where we are going to really see firsthand what disc golf player longevity looks like, because this is the superstar generation of like 2012 players. Your Paul McBess and your Wysocki is a little younger, but your Simons, all those guys, we're watching them get into towards their 30s and into the 30s, and we're going to really find out, okay, what does it look like? At what point did these guys start slowing down? And I think some guys are going to slow down just because their life gets a little busier. They start having kids, that sort of thing. But for those that even don't do that, like, what does that look like? And I think seeing a guy like Simon, who since he turned 29 has been the best he's ever been, that's a great sign, because that means that we can have players that we may have kind of bought out on, just been like, you know, they've had an okay career, but they can find something, turn something around. And all of a sudden, you know, instead of having to look towards the future for a talent pool, we can look towards the present and be like, well, this guy who's 26, he might just find it later in his career. And I think that's great news for disc golf.
Well, I think one thing with Simon is the change of play that has come with age is what's led to these wins.
Oh, absolutely.
Because like when he was younger, you know, AB is doing it at a much younger age, but it's almost similar where like they were just immature isn't the right word, but it's the one I'm going to use, where like there was immature golf decisions being made where it's just like,
well, I don't think they were playing golf. I think they were throwing throw the frisbee hard, but yeah, now they're playing golf.
That's what I'm saying. And then Simon, like as he's gotten older, whether it's been a like his body just can't do what he used to do, or it's just been a like mindset shift, he started playing golf, and next thing he knew, he was like, that's all I had to do to win.
Yeah.
And it makes you question, like,
had
Simon been doing this when he was Eagle's age or when he was Gannon's age, like how many wins would this guy have?
Yeah.
Would Paul ever have had the era Paul had if Simon was playing golf the whole time?
Who knows?
But it was awesome to see. Speaking of Paul, it was awesome to see Paul back in contention. You know, it was funny because the final day lead card almost the exact dream card, because we were like, well, we have to factor, let's just take Paul out of the equation because you'll throw him in there. And then he just pops up and gets in it.
And I was getting dragged around a little bit on social media, which is fair game. But I just think it's so funny that we had been hush-hush about Paul all year long.
And the one time we say something.
And the one time that we decided to be like, and I think he does listen to this show from time to time, so there's a chance that we may have just put a fire under his butt. I don't know.
I'm willing to take credit for it.
Yeah, I'll take credit. Yeah, we created him. But the funny thing is, like, yeah, like, we just decided to mention him, and it felt really safe.
It did.
And, like, the safest, because, like, I feel like last year we were dragging him through the mud, like, all the time, and there was, he was not nearly in his, the kind of, like, dormancy that he's in right now. And, yeah, we decided to talk about it, just be like, yeah, he's kind of, I mean, you almost said that he's never going to be at his best ever again. Well, I forget, what did you say? What was
I
the
said
quote?
He won't be at the Anthony Barella, Calvin Heimberg level of dominance.
Right, okay, yeah.
Which people were saying that my take's already been proven wrong.
Well, that's not true.
It's not true. One weekend doesn't prove it. Simon Lizotte just won by five. He's not at AB Calvin Heimberg level dominance.
I will say,
he's got to do that for the next 6 months.
What was good to see in Paul is, I think it was good for him to get a reminder that he can still compete and get up there at the top of the leaderboard, and you could tell how frustrated he was getting. He was, you could really see that kind of fire, and, you know, he was missing putts and getting real ticked off, and, like, that's good for him. I think that'll motivate him. I think he found it at a really good time leading into the major. I think all of a sudden he now needs to be on everybody's radar a little bit.
He would have been, because it's a major anyways.
He would not have been on my radar.
I don't know
radar.
If I would have put him in top
no
three.
No shot. I would put him on my world's radar no matter what season he's having.
No, it's Northwood. It's Northwood.
He wouldn't have been on my radar.
He wouldn't have been on my radar. I would have put him on your radar. Don't you worry. That's what I'm here for.
Well, I'm just saying.
I'm your Macbeth bloop on the radar. You're like, I'm like, hey. Macbeth.
His game looked interesting, though. I think he was... What's really fascinating is that it was such a forehand dominant course, and, like, people, that's why I'm kind of giving Calvin the pass, because he finished like 32nd, but you needed a forehand out there.
Yeah, and people said that beforehand.
And I think maybe that played to Paul's advantage, because I think he's been throwing a lot of forehands with a shoulder injury. So I'm going to be really curious to see if this continues. I think this event was a little, I mean, look at the, you see Big Germ up there as well, another really good forehand player. I think this course sneakily played very forehand specialist strong. Chris Clemens was up the leaderboard, and I'm wondering how much that has to do with Paul's success, because he threw the backhand fine. His putter obviously didn't come alive in the last round, but it was good enough to get him where it was. But he still looked, I think the good news for him too is he looked very incomplete on that final day and was still able to take second place solo.
Yeah.
So I think there's still more there for him. But yeah, I'm going to be very curious to see. I think this tournament sneakily played very, very forehand friendly, and I think the leaderboard looks a certain way because of that. You know, Ty Love, like, pretty high up on the leaderboard as well. I think Hebenheimer has a good forehand too. I don't know. Maybe I'm misreading that, but I think that was definitely a factor, because, like, that he was throwing the forehand pretty well.
He was. Because going into this event, we know there was two guys that I had mentioned, like, this is a key event for going into major season, which was Ricky Wysocki and Paul Macbeth, and they went 2-3. So it was very, I think, I still stand by, I think this was a very important event for them to, like, continue, because Ricky's been building momentum. Paul needed to wake up. Both of them, that happened this weekend, and we're going to Northwood, where both of them are so comfortable.
Northwood is so up for grabs, like, who knows what's going to happen. Four rounds at Northwood. The way that this, I will say, this tournament did come at a very great time to just shake things up, because we were getting a little comfortable with, like, AB, and a lot of credit to AB, because he climbed that leaderboard.
Yeah.
And instead of a tournament where we were all going to be like, oh, there it was, it's like, nope, he took seventh. Like,
he took seventh, fine.
He played a great, great final two rounds. But this is going to shake us out of that comfortability a little bit. And now, instead of just being like AB, Gannon, Calvin, it's like, what if Paul and Ricky do something?
Yeah, you gotta think.
Simon just won. He's red hot.
He's gone. He's not a champion.
Oh, that's right. He's not even going. Oh, that changes a lot of things. But then you also got to consider some of the other guys that have been quiet, like an Isaac Robinson. Like, are they going to have a
wake-up event? Well, you also have Eagle McMahon's return now at a major.
Yeah, coming back. Maybe, unless he reaches too far into his van again.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, yeah, Simon, I forgot he's not even going to be there.
Yeah, I ran into Simon at the airport, which I can never remember. I've met Simon, but I can't remember if I've met Simon, like, I met him a long time ago in, like, 2015.
I've never actually met him in person.
That's what I'm saying. I met him in 2015 when, like, I was just a disc golf fan stoked to take a picture with him. And then I ran into him at the airport, and, like, I've DM'd him a bunch. And I just got a shout out, because I love when people do something that makes me be like, good guy. You know what I mean? Like, certified good guy. We should have, because, like, Kevin Jones remembered my name after not seeing me for 2 years pre-foundation.
He had a decent event.
Yeah,
forehand,
he was up there.
Forehand event, I'm telling you.
It might have been. But what doesn't bode into that is, like, Chris Dickerson isn't really known. I wouldn't put Simon as, like, a known forehand guy.
No.
I mean, there's definitely some, like, Nick Loss, same thing. I wouldn't put him as a known forehead
guy,
but he does have a sneaky one.
I would say Simon, Nicholas, and Dickerson are three of the best turnover players.
They are, and Dickerson's turnover was on.
And listen, before I'm just picking at straws with that narrative, because granted, anybody who doesn't have a good forehand is typically one of the best turnover players in the game. That's why they're able to finish well without a good forehand. But I definitely saw a lot of it.
James Conrad, 66. That plays right into your narrative.
Right into my narrative. Yep, let's cherry pick that one.
Yeah, we can just cherry pick what we want. but anyways, Simon saw him at the airport. Okay, mm-hmm. He was getting Chick-fil-A. He was carrying his guitar case, which was awesome. He was carrying it on his carry-on.
Two guitars now.
Which he said, like, he was super excited. Like, that he cared more about this event because he wanted another.
That's actually maybe my favorite narrative, that Simon's going to win this event every year just because he wants the guitar. Like, yeah. Simon only cares about winning guitars at this point. He signed, like, a $1 million contract. He just wants guitars.
I didn't see the Kristen guitar meme again. That one should have came back.
Wait, what was the...
You just call it Kristen
guitar. Oh, just Kristen guitar? Yeah.
It's too easy.
It is easy.
Anyways, so I said, like, he was in the Chick-fil-A line. My wife and I were eating Chick-fil-A, so he, like, walked over, and I said hi to him. And then he said hi to Luca, my son, and Luca, like, got really shy. And then Simon was like, oh, it's okay. Mine would do the same. He goes, his name's Luca, right? And, like, just knew Luca's name. I was just impressed. Like, I mean...
He's a listener.
Yeah, I was just... when he said that, I was like, holy cow.
Simon's a real one.
That's impressive. Impressive. Yeah. He was very, very nice and just ate his Chick-fil-A.
He's one of our most loyal... flew home. One of our most loyal listeners. Yeah. I wish some people... like, I feel like there's, like, Simon has, like, basically everybody's a Simon fan in disc golf. Maybe Simon needs to be our bridge to all the haters.
I will say, I got to clarify, speaking of Simon and hate, I got to clarify some stuff on Twitter.
Because
people were taking stuff all kinds of wrong ways. So, I don't even know what this original was in response to, okay? But, so, we delayed grip lock. So, I said, just got back from Music City, tune in tomorrow to hear all about it.
This person was being nonsensical.
This is a Twitter troll.
Yeah.
Very, you know, disc golf Twitter troll. I can't say Twitter troll. That's very hard. Anyways, they said, Simon smoked everyone this weekend, thought people couldn't dominate like that in 2024 because the field's too deep. Okay, so kind of two different points in there.
Okay.
So I'm trying to, I was attacking people can't dominate 2024 because the field's too deep, because, like, the field is deep. And so I was like, okay, so I said, all right, I'll bite. Simon won by 5, which brings the average win margin so far, 6 events into this year, up to 1.67.
Hit him with it.
That's the average. So, like, people aren't dominating. You can't dominate.
I think FPO is, like, 12.
Yeah. And then I, like, secondarily said he also only had a 2-stroke lead going into the final round, so saying he smoked everyone this weekend is a bit dramatic.
I would agree.
Which was my secondary point to my main point.
Okay.
Everyone latched onto that and was coming after me for saying Simon didn't smoke everyone. They said Simon won MCO by as many strokes as each win differential the first 5 events combined. How is that not smoking the field? And I responded and said he smoked in the field in the final round, but a 2-stroke lead going into the final day isn't quote-unquote smoking the field. That's why I said smoking the field all the weekend was a bit dramatic. And then people kept saying, like, nah, man, he smoked the field. Like, that was only responses were about that.
You gotta be careful, man.
And I was like,
Simon's
bro,
got an
is
army,
everyone
dude.
Ignoring this guy was saying you can't dominate 2024?
I tweeted something and that guy responded to, because I tweeted it's like something about, this is the thing about Simon, he always takes advantage, and that same person said, oh, but I was told A, B, and Gannon were gonna win every single event this year. And I was like, nobody ever said that.
No one said that,
Nobody said that.
But then, so then I just quote tweeted myself, and I was like, hey, people are getting caught up on the second part of the tweet. The point's to say, just because one person won by 5 one weekend does not void the rest of the season and say the field isn't deep, like the tweet I responded to was trying to say. Because that's all, I was just trying to counter that point.
Sometimes
like, the field is deep.
You got to stick to the first topic.
I should have just left the first topic, because I still stand by, like...
Dug yourself into a hole.
And there was a few people that made some very... Like, Cody here. Thank you, Cody. He said, Kristen and Holland smoked the FPO field. Simon won comfortably convincingly. There's a difference.
Yeah, let's... Should we make a scale right now. This is actually important, okay? So, smoked, I think it has to be 7+ strokes. Winning comfortable, that's like 4 to 5.
Well, to me, like, Simon went wire to wire, okay? That's completely fair.
Yeah.
Right? But if you have a 2-stroke lead going into the final, like, if Simon would have won by 2, did he smoke the field?
No.
Okay, so then through 2 rounds, Simon wasn't smoking the field.
Right. But then he won by 5, so, like...
So he smoked the field the final round.
Yeah,
it's like, a
listen,
win by 5 is fair, whatever. But, like, he was up by 2 after round 1, and then he maintained a 2-stroke lead after round 2, and then went on to win by 5.
I think that the...
This was another point someone brought up.
I think it's easiest to say... Because, yeah, he won by 5, but I think the reason why it really feels that way is because Paul never I don't think Paul ever got.
Yeah, well, no, Paul.
Like, he was up by seven, I think. Like
Simon
later
was
in the
up
round.
By five through five holes, is what it was. Right. So like Simon just never the final round.
And I think
he was
his
never
lead
challenged.
Got to seven.
Yeah.
So I think like
the final round, he was never challenged, is why it felt like that.
Yeah.
But like if you looked at like going to the final day, you had Simon, and then you had Paul and Gannon only two behind him, and you had Chris Dickerson. Like no one thought it was over. There was not a single person that was like this. I mean, the
maybe
commentary might have
them. Maybe
called
he simmered them.
Well, let's look at this.
He had him in the crock pot and just on the keep warm setting.
Someone made this point on Twitter, and I'm taking it from them.
Okay.
So I don't remember
he
who it was.
He double boiled them.
But this is a great point. From first place to 10th place in FPO, same exact sport that we're using the term smoked in. Okay.
You're sport. Looking at this way too deep now.
No, I'm defending myself here. Okay.
It's just subjective.
Chris and Tatar.
I mean, they're looking at it too deep
from
too.
From first to 10th, 21 strokes separate in FPO. Okay? Okay. We're using the same sport.
Okay.
Okay. So that's FPO, 21 strokes. First to 10th in MPO is only, what is that, 11? So it's like half.
All right.
So, I mean, so then what did Kristen do if she didn't smoke him? Because we can't use smoked.
She nuclear.
That's fine.
She
if we
nuked
him. If we want to use a different term for what Kristen did, that's fine. I can get there. I can be game there. But if we're going to say smoked for Kristen, then we
this
can't say
smoked. This guy's the smoke
there.
Police.
Well, I was just saying. I was just trying to defend. Because then people were trying to like make it seem like I was coming after Simon. And I was like, when I tweeted that Simon won, I literally said, on a different level this weekend.
But he didn't smoke.
I didn't say smoked. I didn't say smoked. He's on a different level. I would have said smoked for Kristen because Kristen and Henna smoked the field.
You guys got to be careful with the smoke word.
Yeah,
behind.
It's like when I said surprise last year. It's the same exact thing going on here. When I said
shocked. It was shocked versus what did I say?
Troubled. You said
troubled. Yeah. Listen, hey, that's Twitter, baby.
But the
that's X.
The Pro Tour posted something along the lines of like they posted top five because top five.
I'd be really funny if anybody from the Pro Tour listened to this and captioned a post like, look back to how Simon smoked the field this past week.
Just wouldn't surprise me. Top five, you have to take out Niklas because that's what they did in this post to make sure they cherry picked it. You had Simon, Paul, Ricky, Chris,
the old
big
guard.
Germ, and they're like the old guard,
which is
up.
A little unfair to Rick because Rick, I think, is still like what, 29, 28.
Somewhere in there, yeah.
I don't think he's 30
But it's just
yet.
Like, this felt like a 2016 leaderboard, if you look at the top of it.
Yeah, it did.
Like, you look, like, if you would have copy and pasted this into, like, 2016 to 18, like, it just fits.
I can't wait to get on debate night, and, oh, it's going to get...
So I have one, I'm on Twitter defending the field's gotten deeper, and then in text messages, I've got Brody texting.
He said,
tough look for your argument, Big Germ in the top five. And I was like, which argument are we talking here? And then he said,
I think I deleted like five different texts.
He said, people are getting worse. And so then I respond. This is the funny part. Because this is before I was defending people on Twitter. I responded and said, I don't know. The whole top of the leaderboard could be a tough look for your field is getting deeper argument. And then Brody just said, how does that make any sense? But I was just, it was funny because I'm defending the field's getting deeper on Twitter. And then I'm having to, like, Brody's thinking that I think the field doesn't get deeper.
Brody thinking that, it just because some players can get worse means that all of them have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, players can get worse. That's what happens.
I think he just got caught up on the main argument, which was in that show, but yeah, I digress.
Yeah. Anyways, Brody, if you're listening, I still think players can get worse, and I think the field has gotten deeper.
He's not listening.
And
dude.
Both
he's,
can be true. No, Brody listens to
Griplock. He's 10 sets into his cardio at
Lifetime Fitness
right now. He's too busy. He's on the massage table right now.
Now, Eagle McMahon dropped from the event due to a tweaked back, as you alluded to, because like he dropped due to injury, so I think it's important to note it's a different injury from the shoulder. He clarified the shoulder feels great. He's feeling confident. He's feeling ready. But
I'm calling hurt, not injured.
Yeah, yeah. He dropped due to just he hurt his back. Because he was like, it was like a game time decision. The Pro Tour pulled him off the feature card because it was like 50-50, is he going to show or not, and all of that. And then he ended up just being like, you know what, I'm waiting for Champions Cup. So he should be back next week just fine. If you weren't paying attention to Eagle's stories, you could have seen Eagle McMahon didn't play.
Tournament Central, like, man. You got to watch Tournament Central.
Yeah. You could have been Eagle McMahon didn't play, his arm screwed.
It's
no.
True.
Back. His
not
back
quite.
Got screwed.
His back, he's not back because of his back.
Now, we have a few more things to talk through MCO before we get to my on-the-ground notes, but the first thing I want to ask is about the commentary crew, because I saw Zach Melton out there.
Dream team.
I saw Zach in the DGN gear, so I know he was doing the on-the-grounds.
Yeah.
I feel like he'd be perfect for that.
Yeah, he's good. Yeah, the thing that's good about Melton is the players like him. He's buddies with, I think, everybody, it seems like. So whenever they try to interview people, like that live interview thing, people are receptive to it. It seems like he's the type of guy people want to give him scoop, right?
Yeah.
So like people will just probably walk up and talk to him. So I think he gets good information that way, and he's got some good humor. I think Brian's tremendous on the ground too.
Yeah.
But obviously the booth was a really good matchup too,
because it was Eisenhood and Brian.
And Brian.
Yeah.
Which those two are great. I think Eisenhood is underrated because I think he's not a huge personality, but I think he stays in his lane pretty well, and like he's pretty clean. Like he doesn't really stumble around. I think he gets across what he needs to. Maybe a little flat, but I liked this combo, and I think Melton on the ground is a great little addition. I think he's almost like a David Faraday type character who they used on the ground a lot, like with NBC Golf, and like could throw a joke in there. I think what would be great would be if we get to the point where we could have a guy like Melton on the ground and a guy like Brian on the ground.
Yeah, no, that'd be awesome.
Sometimes, you know, on golf, sometimes you have like six people and they're covering different holes. But yeah, no, I think it was a great matchup. I was really hoping they would put Eisenhood and Brian together in the booth like that. So I'm glad that they did.
I saw that because DGN or DGPT posted like a Zach Melton highlight type package, and I thought it was very funny when he asked Macy Velladilla. I don't know if you saw that. He asked her, he's like, "How's it fair to the rest of the field when you're out here playing doubles while they're having to play singles?" Because she's pregnant.
That's funny.
And I was like, "That's a funny post." And she responded, "She's like, well, Katrina's playing doubles too, so I think between both of us, one of us should take it down."
Yeah, I say Kat's like 26 weeks now. I saw her on her post, and she's out there playing.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
But little moment, and then they also posted where like Chris Dickerson interviewed Zach walking down, and like. It was funny. Like yeah. It was
that's what I'm saying. Like guys,
I didn't watch
guys
it.
Like Zach.
Yeah. I didn't watch it, but it felt like the clips they posted, it felt like he was able to ride that line of like kept it professional,
yeah,
but it was funny.
Yeah.
To where like was a good entertainment in the mix.
I think Melton will isn't he a lefty too?
Yeah.
Isn't Earhart a lefty?
Yeah.
No, I was about to say he'll be the next lefty to slide his way into the commentary game. A little bit past his stuff with his career, but he's a likable personality. He has a bit of a name, kind of like Earhart, and I think that's where guys like that can fit. And I think he'd be a great addition.
Yeah.
I mean, I think good signing.
Now over here, I have the tee pad that was used.
Did you get to step on one?
I didn't step on
You're
one because
ridiculous.
Well, I mean, I could have. There's multiple opportunities. They tear this course. They tear the course down, like the spectator ropes and stuff. Like immediately after lead card comes through, they're like so. When I walked through, because I like watched lead card for like the first several holes, and then I walked through to catch him at like hole 12 or 13 or something, and like I could have played the course if I wanted, but I didn't because the tee pad guy had handed me these samples and he handed me a full tee pad to bring home, so we have a full tee pad here.
Oh, you brought that home with you in your car?
In the van. I didn't drive. Oh. I flew home, but the Jason
That's
has
right.
it. So yeah, it got brought home. But we have a tee pad sample in hand.
Sometimes
so this
I forget
is,
you own a jet now.
This. I do not. I flew Delta. Delta Economy. I was actually sitting next to a, could have been confused for a giant on my way home the final day.
Nice.
I was just tucked in the corner. But there you go, Trev. There's the turf.
Yeah.
I cut this. This was hole one's tee. Took a knife to it.
I like that. So I like that the turf is a nice, like, tight grain. You know, it's short. It seems fine to me. Like I said, I was telling Hunter this beforehand. If I'm the tee pad company, this is a very small part of the equation when it comes to a tee pad. You got to have a good surface, and I think this is a good surface. But what really matters is what is done underneath that. Is it level? Is it steady? Is it going to over time dent? Like, you know, you have people who do gravel under there, and sometimes they erode. So my worry with like a company like this is they're going to put out a perfectly fine product, feels great, and then they're going to get complaints based on infrastructure that other courses put in to support this piece of turf. And I think if I were them, at least for the Pro Tour, I would want to be in charge of building up the tees completely to whatever their standard is. And Hunter mentioned they sell a base.
Yeah, like, it looks like on their site they sold bases and stuff.
So like that, I think that is a way larger part of the equation than just the turf you step
well,
on.
Well, I think so.
Because that's pretty hard to mess up, like if, as long as you know what
well,
you're doing.
Well, you think. So this has been used at this year, Waco, Jonesboro, now here. And another reason I didn't step on it is I found out this is the turf at Ivy Hill, which is I've went and used. It's the new turf at Ivy Hill.
No, I haven't used it.
So I checked it pre-collegiate tournament, and this stuff's great. Because the one of the keys, I think, with disc golf turf is, like, if it has a directional. Like, it, this is, like, very interlocked. Like, these don't have a direction, if that makes sense.
It's Bermuda.
But, like, if, like, ones that have a direction can, like, over time get worn down and become slick. This, you feel resistance both ways, which I think is very important, to where, like, that helps with the longevity, where if it's rainy, muddy.
Is the whole surface that light?
Yeah, like the entire.
Because what's interesting, like.
Like the heat, I just, like, you know the turf we have, right, at the warehouse?
Right.
Well, where so, it takes, like, multiple
well, here's
men
the
to
difference.
Carry.
The difference is there's no
rubber
filament.
In it. Yeah.
And the reason you have that rubber in turf is mostly for padding, for cushion, to reduce concussion. And that's, it also kind of also levels the surface, because your grass can get all bent around, and that is what you rake to kind of like level it out. So I will say the most interesting thing is, like, those turf surfaces are meant to last a really long time, because they rely so much on that rubber that, like, you can just add more, rake it. These are just relying on the fibers of the grass, which are just kind of stitched into this surface beneath. So I'm curious to see how quickly these will wear out.
I have no idea.
Because, like, if I do that, like, I'm going to get pieces that fall out. So if you're just throwing and throwing and throwing, I'd be interested to know over time how much they wear. And then, like, you've got to replace the whole tee pad. There's no way to,
I have no idea.
Maintenance this turf.
Now, I will say the tee pads, let me, we're not doing an ad read here.
This
anything,
is turf management.
But let me just, okay.
Stuff. Listen, whenever we get the standardized baskets, which, oh my gosh, did you see some of the spit outs? Holy cow.
Yeah.
The veterans baskets were thrown.
I think the veterans
circle.
Are the anti prodigy,
dude,
because there's the chains are too
out,
light.
Yeah, I'd say they throw out, like, good putts. I mean, I was, holy cow, the one, it who was it that almost had two? I think it was Antela, had some that were just, he had one chuck back at him. Paul had one that was, like, hilarious, like, just dead center. Just
so one,
see you later.
One 5 foot by 10 foot tee pad is $250,
which isn't that bad.
So, like, if you just have to replace the top surface, that's not that ridiculous. If now, if that's once a year,
yeah, it depends on how often.
That's pretty bad.
Is it lasting you
5 years? If it lasts you 5 years, that's not bad at all. So I don't know, but hey, I brought it home, you know, and the turf, like the full tee pad, I literally just, like, you just picked it up, like, it was 10 pounds.
Yeah, well, that is nice that they're easier. Like, I feel like I could order those, just put them in myself.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Well, we might put one in our store.
Okay, so. On the ground notes here, just some things I noticed being on the grounds at Music City. First off, Macbeth effect, very real. Because, again, stacked lead card. So everyone, that was one good thing. And why I saw some people commenting about, like, it seemed like there was a big gallery at Music City. Everyone was watching one card.
I would say drone shots. Now, you tell me what you saw. I would say drone shots, it looked like 200 to 300.
I would guess 4-ish.
Okay.
So there was always people in the vendor village.
Yeah.
AB had a solid 20 to 25 people on his card.
Good looks.
And there was people spread out. And the way general admission worked is, like, which I'll talk about this in a second, but, like, you couldn't see, pretty much every hole had some part you couldn't quite see.
Okay.
So people were being picky and choosy. So, like, while I would say 95% of people were watching lead card, not everyone was on one hole.
Okay.
So, like, hole 1 and 3 were back-to-back. Most of general admission didn't go to hole 2. Because you could have, but it would have been very tight. So, instead, people just jumped to hole 3 to try to get in the front. You know what I mean? So, it was a lot of, like, jumping. So, the gallery was split a little bit, but it was a solid gallery. I was impressed. There was enough people out there that you didn't feel weird if you were cheering.
You get the Alabama crowd. Tennessee is a big disc golf place, so it makes sense.
But
I will say, somebody dropped a best... I think it was one of the commentators, might have been Brian, dropped a best Tennessee disc golfer ever label on Dickerson.
I mean, who's to argue with it?
The man with 3 United States championships.
Oh, Shoestrick? Does he claim Tennessee, though? Or does he claim Georgia?
What the heck are you talking about?
Oh, he lives in Georgia now.
Yeah, well, that doesn't mean he's like born and raised Tennessee. He's like, he's a Tennessee Vols fan.
I would claim
him.
I would claim him Tennessee, but I'm just saying that could have been.
Will Shoestrick's my Tennessee goat.
That's a good argument. That's a good tweet.
My Tennessee goat.
I think it's hard to argue against him. I mean, has Chris ever been the number one player in the world?
Chris has two Disc Golf Pro Tour championships. He's playing in a tougher era. He's got two.
He has a U.S. title.
He just has one major. Yeah. That's the problem. It's the one major. If Chris had two majors, I'd probably...
Nope, two. Champions Cup and USDGC.
Oof. I'm still going to give it to Will because I love Will.
He has Champions
if
Cup
and
USDGC.
If he gets a third one, though, I'm sorry. It's not going to happen.
I think he only has two. I think it's just Champions Cup
What I always have with Schustrick is the what-if argument, you know?
But they were also saying
his prime was special, man.
They were also saying, like, some of Chris's stats, like, he's the greatest Tennessee golfer. Like, when he's in Tennessee is how I took that statement.
I took it as, like, from Tennessee. Like, the guy, like, born and bred in Tennessee Hills.
Yeah, he has Champions Cup, USDGC, that's are right. His two.
He's had a good career.
But then, yeah, I mean, he's got a lot of pro tours and stuff. So, anyways.
Will's a goat.
But, anyways, we had the Macbeth effect, though. What I was saying is you had lead card tee off, and like we said, you had Gannon Burr, you had Simon Lazard, you had Chris Dickerson, and you had Paul.
Yeah,
a lot of fan favorites, okay? Yeah. Paul's roar when they announced him on hole one.
It's different.
Probably close to twice as loud.
That's a good little reminder because I didn't know what that was going to be like these days because like I've been wondering the last few months just like is that kind of just like died down a little bit like no. What does this fan base still look like? It's like Tiger Woods.
Yeah, you forget. Everyone was so like, and that was also the thing. Gosh, I was asked
dude,
about
I hope he
most
gets in contention in
worlds. The vending booth was like everyone was just excited that Paul was in contention. So yeah. When Paul was announced, it was very loud. The vendor area. So actual, this is another important note, which I've already talked about this a little bit. There was an actual entrance with a gate and workers to get into the event.
Wow.
Which I know that doesn't sound like much.
That sentence is just
so
funny.
But as someone who's been
to
Pro Tours.
An actual gate.
Like as someone who's been to Pro Tours previously, and this is my first Pro Tour I've been to like this year in a while. Like I walked up, I checked in with a person who like told me like information about the course, information about all that, gave me my like spectator pass. They scanned a QR code on my phone for my ticket. And then you had to check in with them every day. And like I said, post Natalie Ryan.
Does your ticket go to Apple Wallet?
No, it was on Eventbrite. Post Natalie Ryan, there was even a bag check. Security. Yeah. Like it was I felt like I was entering an actual
There's
event.
Things happening.
There was things happening. Love so it, love it. I know that sounds like a funny if it you've been to funny. Any other event, like any other non disc golf event, that sounds funny.
Yeah.
Big deal for disc golf, it felt like. The vendor area was open to the public, which I liked.
That's
like
cool.
You didn't have a ticket to the event.
And then you might get there
area.
And decide to buy a ticket. I like that. Good play.
And it was also I think this is why they redesigned the course as they did. Although hole 18 kind of was cheeks. You should probably be glad it came down to, especially the final day. It was probably like a 35 mile an hour headwind.
Yeah.
Like people were just getting bodied on hole 18. Mm-hmm. Anyways, it was right where everyone had to walk in. So it was like they funneled everyone to the vendor area. You walked through the vendors, which was great.
Was it pretty busy in the vending village?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was awesome. I got to meet a ton of people, ton of you guys who listen. I appreciate all of you. It was a great time. And I wanted to mention there was definitely a value difference from general admission to VIP, from parking to how much golf you got to watch. Like general admission was worth it because I paid for my general admission ticket. Worth it. I got to see enough golf to I didn't because of my son. But had I, like, access-wise, I walked the entire course once. So access-wise to see all the holes, you got to see plenty of golf. But it was, like, general admission, we parked at a high school, and you had about a 0.3-ish mile walk to the course. So you had to walk. VIP, you parked at the course.
Yeah.
Then general admission, they had, like, six different areas you could get to. And all of them, you could see, like hole one, you could see the tee shot and you could see the basket off in the distance, but you like couldn't get close to it. Hole three was similar. Like you could see everything happening, but you weren't right in on the action. There were some holes where you couldn't quite see the tee, but you could see everything else, or some holes where you could see the tee, you couldn't quite see the best. So like you saw plenty of golf, but you weren't watching every single shot. That wasn't going to happen in general admission. VIP, you were behind the card, more traditional disc golf gallery, walking with them, and you were watching every single shot.
Right.
So there was a definite value difference from general admission to VIP, which I know a lot of people have asked, like, is VIP worth it? What should we do? You know what I'm saying? And so, yes, VIP is worth it because, like, you could see most of the course with general admission, but, like, if you're going as a diehard disc golf fan or especially, like, I want to see every shot AB throws this weekend, you get the VIP pass. So I think that was also an important thing to note on the ground because from a distance, it's easy to be, like, just buy general admission. What's the difference? Like, why do you want – but, like, the parking would have been – like, it would have been nice to have a VIP pass.
Yeah.
So
sounds like it.
Now let's update the manufacturer's cup.
I
got to get
out to a pro tour. I feel like a fraud.
It was awesome.
I've been to a few majors now. Been to be
it wasn't USDGC. Let's clarify.
No,
that.
But like, I got to get out there. I got to get out to one so I can like have the perspective.
Yeah, it was very cool.
Which one should I go to? Comment below.
There you go. Comment below.
Des Moines.
We'll send Trevor to one.
I'm going to go to Des Moines.
Okay. Hey, I've heard a lot of good stuff.
Saying,
about that
I low key want to go to Des Moines.
So manufacturer's cup update after Music City. Discraft increased their lead over Discmania with Paul getting solo second and Chris tying for third. And AB was able to sneak into that top 10 with a tie for seventh. Simon Lizotte's win catapulted MVP up four spots to fifth place, and Simon has now more points by himself than all but four manufacturers, and AB and Gannon are the only players to earn points every week this season, six events in. So you now have Discraft in the lead at 210 points, Discmania in second at 166, Innova in third at 59, Dynamic Discs in fourth at 35.75, which is important because MVP is in fifth at 35. Then you have Prodigy at 27.5, Westside at 19.5, Mint at 15, DGA at 14, and Latitude 64 at 8.
It's a good reminder from Edwin that Edwin does this, right?
Yes.
It's a good reminder from Edwin that like AB and Gannon are the only two to be in there every time, because like that's good to know, to like be like, yeah, those guys haven't been outside the top 10 yet this year.
Yeah.
Now, how long will that last? That's insane.
Before we get into Trevor's trivia, I do want to quickly mention, if you love the parts of Grip Locked where we go off on non-disc golf tangents, and you're going to love The Banter. If you've never listened to The Banter, previously it was a weekly podcast, but starting tomorrow, Wednesday, The Banter will be a weekly live show at 9 a.m. Eastern every single Wednesday. You can tune in for random topics, fun challenges, games, and more. The Banter is Foundation Disc Golf's one-stop shop for all things non-disc golf. You can find the live stream over on The Banter's YouTube channel. We'll see you over there tomorrow. Trevor, Tyrant fan favorite segment, Trevor's trivia. What do you got?
Yes, sir. Okay, we're going to do a little foundation trivia.
Ooh.
So I've got some of our most popular videos all time.
Okay.
And I've got them paired up, and you're going to try and guess which one of the two, we got five rounds of this, which one of the two has the most views.
Okay. Okay, I should be good at this.
It's not going to be easy because a lot of they're all in the same ballpark.
I think I'll be good at this.
Okay. So you're going to have to go on intuition. So first round. Can Hunter beat Paul's 10-under unlimited mulligan challenge at New London versus the truth about the tilt-only round?
I think my mulligan challenge. No, yeah, my mulligan challenge I think is a little bit more.
You got guesses on the views?
I think the tilt's at 79, and I think my mulligan's probably like 84.
You are way off on that one. You got it correct. Mulligan is at 105. The truth about the tilt is at 98.
No.
Much higher.
Hey.
Next we have, okay, one for one. Next we have Berg versus Glitch, disc golf battle of glide versus we throw further than David Wiggins Jr.
I think Berg versus Glitch is higher than the David Wiggins one.
Any guesses on views for those?
Okay, you call me crazy, but I think it's 79. I think Berg versus Glitch is 79.
Berg versus Glitch is 93.
Okay.
And we throw further than David Wiggins is 90. So you're correct again.
Hey.
Two for two.
Doesn't matter if I know the views.
I will stop asking you about the views.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if I know the views.
Okay, let's even go three for three. Can Connor break 86 at New London, greatest comeback ever, versus we played with the most expensive bag we could build?
Most expensive bag we can build, I believe. I don't remember if that one is... I think that's Connor's last one, which would make sense. But I think the most expensive bag was a really, really good performing video.
That is wrong. I believe this is the first break 86. And it was 92,000 views versus 86,000.
Dang.
Next we have...
Well, now I'm curious if the most expensive was more than Connor's most recent one. Because that was a video I was thinking of.
His most recent one, it's probably close. It's probably in the 80s. It's probably close. Hmm. A fast run-up is killing your distance, disc golf Mythbusters, versus we played the worst disc golf course in the country.
So this is a little of an unfair comparison because that's the first disc golf Mythbusters we ever did.
Yeah.
Which was like a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And the worst disc golf in the country was only like 3 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that beats it. I think worst disc golf course in the country beats it.
Our last break 86, by the way, had 82,000. So it's not quite as much, but it's up there. Which one are you saying?
I think the worst course beats it.
That's correct.
Yeah.
90,000 views to 85,000. And then final round, try to go 4 for 5. That'd be pretty impressive. We played a round using the internet's most hated disc versus insane finish to the first annual Creators Cup.
Oh, first annual Creator Cup definitely had a lot of views in that final. I think most hated disc edges it out.
It does. 89,000
to 85,000. All right. Hunter's got a grab.
I would have went 5 for 5 had I remembered which Connor was the right one.
Yeah, you probably would have. That was very, very impressive.
I check analytics pretty frequently, so I would have been upset if I messed that up.
Big analytics guy.
Speaking of analytics, actually, I don't even know if we are speaking of analytics, but the Disc Golf Pro Tour has partnered with U.S. Integrity, which is a sign that gambling is going to be a bigger involvement in disc golf in the somewhat near future. Mm. So they signed a comprehensive partnership with U.S. Integrity. I'm going to just read this because it answers all the questions you're about to ask me. I'm going to be honest with you. U.S. Integrity and the Disc Golf Pro Tour announced a comprehensive partnership that will begin the process of launching professional disc golf into the world of regulated sports wagering. U.S. Integrity is an integrity monitoring service provider that has worked with various professional sporting organizations and major sports books to ensure compliance and fair play. U.S. Integrity will serve the Disc Golf Pro Tour's consulting and integrity monitoring service provider as the tour works towards offering wagering opportunities to fans. As sports books begin to include tour events, U.S. Integrity will provide the Disc Golf Pro Tour with integrity monitoring services via its proprietary dashboard, which will encompass data, intelligence, and fraud prevention. To deliver these services, U.S. Integrity conducts analysis across dozens of data sets to proactively identify irregular contest level and wagering patterns. So more about U.S. Integrity, because like when I first heard this, I didn't really understand what exactly going on. U.S. Integrity is a leading technology-driven sports wagering monitoring company, providing the highest level of protection against betting-related fraud and corruption. U.S. Integrity's mission is to grow the legal, regulated sports betting market by providing solutions that ensure sports betting integrity in every play, every game, every sport. Supported by investors including 76 Capital and Las Vegas Sands, U.S. Integrity provides partners with a number of the largest professional sports leagues and collegiate conferences in the U.S., as well as licensed sports betting operators and regulators. And it's based in Las Vegas and New York.
This is basically the move. I mean, most people's feedback about this announcement was like, holy cow, all the players are going to be betting on themselves. This is the move to try and counter that. Here's the thing. There's been sports betting scandals have been like amongst players have been around for a very long time. We just saw one in the NBA where a guy just got banned for life. Companies like this are really, really good at monitoring this sort of thing. And so that's kind of the idea, because like disc golf, it'll be dangerous. You know, there is a lot of guys not making a ton of money who have a very direct control to what happens on the course. And putting $1,000 down on yourself could be a real big payout. So I think that's going to be the tricky thing. I'm very curious to see what they offer and on which players they offer, because with the NBA, what just happened is you had this guy who was a two-way role player put down these parlays on all of his unders and then basically check out of the game injured to cash out on all this money. And what has happened as a result of that is a lot of sports betting places are like, we're not going to offer prop bets on these players who are lower caliber, not paid as much, because that's where there's more risk. LeBron James has no need to be putting down a parlay on his unders. He's just trying to win championships. Not doing so hot at that right now. In any case, I think that is going to be really interesting to see what they decide to offer, what this looks like. Listen, everybody has their opinions. I'm very excited about this because, A, I think it's going to grow disc golf tremendously, because people will bet on disc golf that have no idea what disc golf is. This is actually a grow the sport initiative, believe it or not. I think it'll bring money into the Pro Tour, hopefully. I think we should all be happy that, you know, our sport can get more resources, and I'm going to have a lot of fun with it.
Well, I think the tough part, because like in other sports, like Scottie Scheffler, okay, we talked about him earlier. He just won over $3 million at RBC Heritage. Okay, you'd have to bet a lot of money to make more
purposely losing. Yeah, in boxing, you're allowed to bet on yourself. Ryan Garcia just put like $2 million on himself to win and then won.
But you can only bet on yourself to win, surely.
Right? Yeah. Yes, correct.
Which that makes sense. Mm-hmm. That's fair.
Yeah.
But in disc golf, like,
well, unless it, I will say that is interesting though, because like then he could be under the table paying the other guy to lose.
You're doesn't like, matter. Don't think about it too much. If you think about anything that's too allowed. Much, there's a lot of ways around it. But anyways, yeah. You wouldn't have to bet that much in the grand scheme of things for you to make more than Simon Lazat winning $10,000.
Or even just like a good cash.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, yeah, that's where it's tough, is like in golf and a lot of other sports, like there's so much money on the line that like the players would have to risk an enormous amount. Like,
yeah.
Here, you could put a parlay together of like probably $200 and win what like third place is winning.
Oh,
easily.
Yeah, I mean, there's no talent. Like, you could win a ton of money.
Like, I mean, if you, so that's where it's tough, is like if the lines are bad, which they were with Prize Picks.
Yeah, Prize Picks got gutted.
If the lines are bad, you will have a lot of people making more money off disc golf than the disc golfers playing the disc golf.
I would like to...
Which it just doesn't happen in other sports, which is where I think disc golf is a lot more open to this, which is why this partnership with U.S. Integrity is important.
Yeah, I would love to know. I'd like to just talk to Jeff and be like, It feels like they're trying to move this thing along pretty quickly. I would just like to know what the timeline even looks like. What happens now? Like, do you just start, okay, we have this partnership. Did they get this partnership because they already have all this interest? Or is it like now do they start pitching themselves to sports books? I don't know how a niche sport.
Well, it seems like step one was when the PDGA Live took over the stats. Because remember, yeah, that was
well,
like
they wanted
we're
like
to
the
get...
proprietary in-house stats. But like as far as getting in sports books, do they have to wait to be approached? Do they sell themselves? Like, how do niche sports get in them? Or is this they want to do their own platform? They want to have their own fantasy platform. They want
might.
To like. There's so many different ways this could go. You know, it's going to be very interesting to see where they take it first and how quickly that happens. Like, are we going to see this in 3 years, or is this going to be something that it's announced in the off season? If they're doing something in-house, it'll take them 15 years based on how long it's taken to put together their scoring platform.
I'll say, what if this is why the scoring platform's taking so long?
Maybe.
This
oh
is the
gosh.
Size.
I
this
can tell you
key.
Right now. Listen, I have never felt more in danger because I don't follow any other sport closely enough to ever think that I would have a chance betting. Disc golf is that sport. And last time when Prize Picks was around and they were throwing out the worst lines ever, I didn't. Once I hit my stride, I think at the early Prize Picks, they were pretty good.
Yeah, they were good. Because
I was getting beat up a few times, but like towards the end of the game, maybe they might have got lazy because I was taking them for everything they had. And I think everybody was. And so I think this is going to be definitely pretty dangerous for me. Yeah, I might have to be locked in a room with no phone for like certain time periods.
Well, we'll take care of that for you. We have enough, there's enough people who are checking
what
on
I
you
need,
regularly anyways
well,
with your gambling, that I think you'll be okay.
I'm just going to have to... What the heck does that even mean? I don't gamble.
No, I'm saying our patrons. Our patron ask every week like how your gambling's going.
I have not placed... The last bet I placed was on March Madness.
You've done this
and it was
to yourself.
Free.
You back yourself into this yourself.
I don't understand why. No, what I'm going to do is I'll just start a gambling podcast, a disc golf gambling podcast, and I'll just use like 10% of the earnings to place the gambles to talk about. The gambles. Look, I don't even know the terminology. Place okay. The gambles.
All right, let's dive into our top 10 here to wrap this show out, okay? We've been talking for a while. So
I'm
this
just
is
telling
going
you,
to,
man, if I put down a parlay and it loses because somebody gets a veteran's basket, spits somebody out, kind of rampage I'd go on.
You'll be able to tell what Trevor had a bet on based on his anger level on grip lock.
Oh, my. Yeah, like I get so worked up about a certain player. And it's
everyone's like why is Trevor so ticked off?
They finished in 26th. Like, they're not even a known player. And it's like, but I had the over.
So funny. Okay, we got to take a look at this. So we still, our top 10 right now has AB 1, Gannon 2, Kyle Klein 3, Niklas 4, Ricky 5, Matty O 6, Calvin 7, Cole Rodallin 8, Mason Ford 9, Ezra Robinson 10.
Let's do it this way. Let's think about who at the top of the leaderboard even from this past weekend.
Let's just look at standings.
Consider.
Let's look at standings super fast and just see. Okay. So,
because Simon obviously jumps out as like he will,
Simon is in seventh right now.
Yeah, he will need to move.
He's
up.
Not in our top 10.
Dickerson, is he in right now?
Chris Dickerson's in sixth in the standings right now. He's not in our top 10.
So he might also need to move in.
Luke Humphreys is in ninth right now. He's not in our top 10. You have Calvin, we have in seventh. He's in eighth. So that's fine.
I think Simon,
Kyle Klein.
Simon and Dickerson
we have in third.
Are,
okay.
are the ones that are the most interesting.
So let's start here. Simon Lazata, Ezra Robinson, Statmando head to head. Because Ezra Robinson's our 10th place guy right now.
Yeah. These are the ones that we got to look at. Because obviously Simon just having a win means that like we got to weigh him pretty heavy.
Simon, so Ezra's 4-2 against Simon this year.
Simon's won the last two events. See, like that alone for me, winning the last two against that guy and just getting a win, like I think you got to
okay, so
him
Simon
in.
Lazat is welcome to 10th place. Let's
unfortunately,
look at
he's not going to be there for long.
Let's look at him versus Mason Ford.
We'll put him there for right now because like I think next week he'll get bumped out because he's not going to be there, and then he's not going to be there again, and then he's not going to be there again.
All right, Mason Ford, Simon's 2-2-1 against Mason this year. Mason was not at Music City. Important note, Simon did win it, but Simon beat him at Jonesboro.
Why was Mason not there?
I don't know. So Mason Ford's season, he went 47th, 4th, 16th, 7th,
10th. Like I said, I think we just keep Simon there because he's literally going to get bumped out next week.
Okay, so then the other person you want to look at is Chris Dickerson.
He's just, yeah, Dickerson, I think, has been actually pretty good.
Let's look at Dickerson compared to Mason Ford. Dickerson's 3-1 against him.
Yeah.
Dickerson's last three events, not including Music City, because again, Mason Ford's not there.
Heater.
He went 6th, 9th, 7th.
He's got to jump
in. Is Chris Dickerson not in our top 10?
No,
what are we doing?
I think we're sleeping on him a little bit.
Let's just put him above Lazoff right now.
Rodon had a good event, though.
Let's compare Dickerson to Rodon.
Rodon, I think, was like top 10.
Dickerson's 4-2 against him. How have we been sleeping on Chris?
Yeah, we have been. He's been on a tear.
Yeah, this is ridiculous. Okay, so Rodon X'd out. And Rodon's now in 9th. Okay, Dickerson versus Calvin.
It's probably where his luck runs out.
Do we think?
Maybe. I mean, he definitely beat him at his last event. The last event, Heimberg took his 30th.
That's true. 2-2-1. So Dickerson went. Luckily, they tied at All-Stars. We don't have to pay attention to that. So Dickerson beat him at chess.com, lost
really
two
close.
In a row, and then beat him at...
They've been very tight.
So Heimberg went 34th, 3rd, 2nd, 34th. Dickerson went 28th, 9th, 7th, 3rd.
I'd give it to Dickerson. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd say he probably is going to stop right there.
You just said that before.
Was Matty O at this event?
Let's go Dickerson to Matty O. He was. I saw him.
Okay.
I saw him leaving the course early, I do not think he played well.
That's interesting because he usually...
Dickerson's 4-1 against Matty O.
Oh,
he came in 81st.
He must have gotten
hurt. He DNF'd, surely.
He had to have. He never plays like that.
There's 114 players, and Matty O just came in 81st.
That is... As far as anomalies in disc golf in recent time.
He went 2 over par.
That never happens.
Matty O might have just dropped out of the top 10.
That never happens.
Okay, so Matty O, we're going to have to compare Matty O to Calvin Heimberg here in a second because I think Calvin's going to edge him out. Okay, Dickerson to Ricky. This is where it should stop.
I don't know. Dickerson's been on a really good stretch.
Okay, Dickerson to Ricky. Chris is 3-1 against him. Why did y'all not call us out for sleeping on Chris last week?
So.
Okay, because chess.com. Chris went 28th. Ricky went 2nd. Since then, Chris went 6th to Ricky 10th. Chris went 7th to Ricky 12th. I don't know, though. Because then 3-3. Like, Ricky hasn't finished outside the top 12 yet. Dickerson has that 28th at chess.
That's a while ago. That's a long time ago, though.
But it's not that long ago.
The very first event of the season.
Yeah.
He's been better.
Who hasn't played events? So one of these two hasn't played all the events.
Rick
hasn't.
Took a break, remember?
That's right. Okay, do you want to give it to Chris? They both just tied for 3rd.
Maybe just hold it there for
now. I think we hold it here. Okay, well, let's go. Who would we need? We need to go Matty O to Calvin Heimberg is who we need to go to.
Yeah, that 80th is a pretty gross blemish, which is unfortunate because like that his whole like reason he always stays in the top 10 is because
he just doesn't mess up. Calvin's 4-2 against him. Even with that blemish,
because like
prior to that blemish,
he's been so good. Like he's been a guy that you could.
But
I think
Calvin's 34th finish jumps him over Matty O.
Yeah, no, I think Matty O might need to move down pretty significantly here.
All right, let's go Cole Rodon to Matty O really quick.
Just because that 81st
is
just gross,
crazy. Rodon's 3-2 against him. Oh, Matty O came in 45th at Waco. We missed that, too.
Oh, yeah. That wasn't popping up on the other one.
Well, because people didn't play Waco. I think Rodon's got to jump him.
Yeah. Matty O might be really sliding
there. I think Rodon's got to jump Matty O. So then it goes Matty O versus Lazat. We might be putting Ezra Robinson back in this thing.
Dang, dude.
Let's just go Matty O to Ezra Robinson.
Just a crazy skid right now.
Yeah. Ezra Robinson compared to Matty O. Matty's 5-3 against him. I think we're fine to put 81st.
It's pretty gross.
And a 45th. Like, Ezra's worst finish this year is 27th.
It's pretty gross.
I think I like Ezra Robinson as a better top 10 player.
I won't fight you.
Okay, so I think Matty O's out of the top 10, and Ezra Robinson's back in 10th.
Okay.
So now we just have to look at the people above Rick. We have
Nicklaus,
Kyle.
What about Ezra Aderholt? Was he at this event? Yes.
He did not do good. Aderholt Ezra compared to Ed. The Battle of the Ezras. Robinson beats him 4-2.
Okay, he just had that couple week hot.
He went 70th at chess, 18th at Waco, 44th at Open at Austin, 3rd, 2nd, and then 28th at.
Okay.
Yeah,
if he had put together another good week.
If he had come
week,
together, yeah, another one. So we just got to look. So the Pro Tour has AB, Gannon, Nicklaus, Ricky, Kyle. We have AB, Gannon, Kyle, Nicklaus, Ricky. Yeah. After Music City, Do we feel any certain way? Niklas, because we went Gannon and AB tied for 7th. Niklas came in 5th. Ricky came in 3rd. So they were all right there.
You could maybe jump like Niklas and Ricky over Kyle because he DNF'd. Just because like,
okay,
they'll have a little more momentum than him.
I'm fair with that. I'm game with that.
But I wouldn't touch the rest of it.
I think we leave it there. Yeah. I like this list. Okay, so AB 1, Gannon 2, Niklas 3, Ricky 4, Kyle's 5, Dickerson 6, Calvin 7, Cole 8, Lazat 9, Robinson 10.
Love it.
Now, FPO, my opinion. Let's see, did
as Kristen's got to go back
did
to
Evelina
one.
Play? Evelina came in 6th.
Yeah, she did.
So I think Holland jumps Evelina. They flip. So Evelina goes to 5th, Holland goes to 4th.
Okay.
And then I think Kristen goes to 1 and Owen and Missy tie for 2.
Fine with me. Oh, I forgot we have a tie.
We have a 3-way tie right now.
That's right.
Because I think they didn't play, and Kristen showed up and won. So yeah. I think you got to give her credit there.
Oh, you do.
And then I think we go Evelina goes down to 5th, and Holland Handley.
You got your first dosage of poison ivy yet this year?
I haven't. I don't know if I'm allergic to it.
I just got a little bit of it, like a little strip, not
all
too
right.
bad.
We don't have a Silas Alex this week.
Is he here?
Where I don't know if Silas is here. I think he's in the bathroom. Dang. Do we want to do a...
No, we can't do
we can't
that.
Do it?
No.
Okay. We just won't do it this episode. Connor like is in the episode now, but he's not. So I think we just ignore no Silas Select this week because it wouldn't be.
Yeah, good. That's true. That's true.
I think it just is off episode. It's on Tuesday too.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that would put an asterisk next to it if someone
that's
did
true.
Get it. So I think we just ignore the Silas Select for this week.
Get it on a Tuesday.
Don't forget to tune into the banter tomorrow 9 a.m.
Live.
It's gonna be a lot of fun. A lot of stuff planned. Also a lot of stuff not planned yet. But hey, we got till tomorrow at 9. Yeah. So
forever.
And it's gonna be live.
Forever.
We'll see you then. Ooh, also major. This weekend, preview show also coming out tomorrow. Don't miss that either.
Hit him with it.
Champions Cup this weekend. You're not going to miss it.